Pop Spotting 162.
Tuesday, November 15th, 2011. Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's TV Tuesday, and today we're heading out west and heading back in time to review the pilot episode of AMC's Hell on Wheels.
We're also going to discuss, I think, our first reality show, but it's a cooking show, so that makes it okay, and that's the next Iron Chef on the Food Network.
Of course, these are just our takes, and we'd love to hear yours.
Absolutely. So let's start, though, with Hell on Wheels. I think it was highly anticipated, perhaps skeptically anticipated. As we've previously discussed, AMC is definitely on a roll with these original shows, albeit not without a few bumps and bruises. They've got Mad Men, they've got Breaking Bad and Walking Dead, and now they're adding Hell on Wheels, which is a historical Western.
Of course, AMC started out as a network that broadcast a lot of old Westerns,
right?
So I think this was a pretty decent match for them, but it also kind of ran the risk of being a copy of Deadwood.
Right, I think that was your first impression. Unfortunately, we can't speak to that because we've yet to dive into Deadwood, although we know a lot of big fans of that show. We know it's something we do have to check out, so we're really only able to or interested in covering how Hell on Wheels stands up on its own, and we're only going to be covering the pilot, and we're not going to try to spoil too much. Well, what's the basic setup of Hell on Wheels?
It's 1865. The Civil War has just ended. President Lincoln is dead, and the country is trying to get back on its feet and press west. The show follows former Confederate soldier Cullen Bohannon, who's played by Anson Mount. He lost everything in the war, and he's out for vengeance on the men who killed his wife.
Right. Now, the setting is Hell on Wheels, hence the name, and Hell on Wheels is a makeshift frontier town at the end, the moving end of the Transcontinental Railroad as it's being built, and the rugged men and women there are battling the elements, they're battling each other, and of course, Native American tribes that are trying to defend their land as well. So, you mentioned Anson Mount playing Cullen Bohannon. Let's go through some of these characters. Now, starting with him, he's a former Confederate soldier, he's trying to avenge the death of his wife, and as far as performances, he's the guy that has to carry the show. He's the person who we're going to have to care about if we're going to care about this show and this town, Hell on Wheels. How do you think Anson Mount did here in this pilot of this new show?
He's very quiet. His character is, I think he's going to be an anti-hero. It's,
well,
I think,
course,
a bit like Walter White or even Sawyer, somebody that we end up rooting for in spite of ourselves. And it's really kind of too early to tell since it is the pilot, but I know that he must be channeling Clint Eastwood a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think he's really watched a lot of Westerns to get cues on how to approach his character.
Well, he's trying to be very dark and very brooding. I see some Old Country for Old Men here. I see a lot of influences in both of the show and in his character. I do got to say that I had a sense that maybe the creators are trying to pull their punches a little bit in making him an anti-hero. I mean, this is AMC, so that's not a surprise. But yes, they have a really dramatic and bold opening for this pilot where he dispatches somebody in a holy sanctuary. I mean, oh my God. And yes, he used to own slaves and he was in the South, but he loved this woman and she talked him into freeing the slave, so he's actually a nice guy. So, you know, I find that balance interesting. I do think that he's much stronger playing a bad guy than he is playing a bad guy with a heart of gold. On the other side of this chasm of characters, you have the clear villain of this show, the high-level bad guy, the almost, you know, mustache-twirling, cackling bad guy. The character is Thomas or Doc Durant. He's the investor. He's trying to build this transcontinental railroad. He's trying to make money. He's trying to cheat the government. He's played by Colm Meaney, who I love, although I basically have a blind spot because he was in Star Trek The Next Generation. So I got to ask you, I mean, is he as hysterically ridiculous as a bad guy, or is there something here for Colm Meaney to chew on?
He's a little bit over the top, I have to admit. I was just waiting for thunder and lightning and right,
exactly.
I'm hoping that as we get to know this character, he becomes a little bit more complex, because it's really, really easy to hate on him right now.
And it's very black and white. I mean, oh, look, I am just outright bribing a government official. Oh, I'm going to make this railroad go in a different direction because it costs the government more. I mean, he fires somebody because he won't go along with his schemes. I mean, there is almost no depth to him. And his lines in particularly the end of this pilot, which I think we'll talk about separately, really made it hard to get into him as a character and as a performer. Another performer that I think people had raised eyebrows about, who's going to be a star of this show, is the rapper Common. I guess he used to be Common Sense. I don't even know what he was before that. but he's playing a former slave, a recently freed slave, who's out there working in the ditches, helping to build this railroad. He's playing Elam Ferguson, which is a heck of a name, but in any case, Common, I mean, he's going to have to carry a lot in this series, I think, if it's going to be an exploration in any way of race relations and the end of slavery. And he's a rapper, and people aren't sure if that's going to really work out. Do you see enough here in his performance in the pilot to say that he's up to the challenge, that he's going to be able to pull it off?
He's going to be great. He's going to be awesome. He's only had small parts in several movies. He was in American Gangster, and he was in Smoking Aces, which half the cast of Lost was on.
Right.
But I think he's going to do a really good job. I can already see a lot of potential in him. I think he's going to be great.
I do, too. I was surprised. I mean, I know nothing of him as a musician. I don't even know him as an actor as you do. But, you know, just reading that he was, I was like, uh-oh, you know, stunt casting, or they're trying to do something dramatic here that might not work out. But I had really no complaints about his performance, about his face, about how he throws his weight and dramatic strength around. I think it's more the writing for his character, just like with Colm Meaney, I think that might be more of the weakness. There are women in this rugged town as well, although I think we were only introduced in depth to one, and that's the character of Lily Bell, played by Dominique McGilligott, and she's basically the wife of a man who was a surveyor working on building or laying the track or the path for this railroad, and she ends up basically having to fend for herself. She's on her own now by the end of the pilot, and I have to say that I did like her scenes with her husband, and her scenes basically having to fight for her life and now heading off. I think that that was one of the more dramatic sequences in this entire pilot, and something that I want to see more of on this show.
She reminded me of Daenerys Targaryen from Game of Thrones, you know, the dragon
right.
queen, and
right.
that, you know, we think Daenerys is this really sweet, pretty little girl, and she ends up kicking butt, and I think that's what Lily does, is she ends up in a bad situation, and she gets out of it very efficiently, and I can't wait to see what Lily is like.
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of like that, the Daenerys from Game of Thrones. I can almost see that as the arc for her character, maybe, in terms of where she is now at the end of the pilot, and again, so her performance and her character surprising me in terms of how little they gave all of these characters to do as they're just introducing them, but she turned out to be one that I really clung on to, that I want to see more of. We met a few other, you know, characters that we're obviously going to see more of. We met a couple of Irish brothers also trying to make a way, you know, trying to hit the American dream out there out west. Ben Esler and Phil Burke playing Sean and Mickey McGinnis right now. I think they're running a theater or something, but I think they're basically going to be the characters that are going to come up with multiple schemes to make money in this town.
One of them reminded me of one of the twins that plays Fred and George in the Harry Potter films, and I was convinced of it, and I actually watched the credits to see if it was one of them.
Well, you know, it's funny, when there's a scene on the train where we meet them, and I was just fixated on one of them because I was like, is he trying to do Michael J. Fox in Back to the Future 3? You know, that was the Western version of that
right.
franchise, so I guess it's hard to get some of these images out of our head. There are other characters that we met briefly that are going to play a bigger role. We've got a fire and brimstone preacher played by Tom Noonan.
Tom Noonan is a really interesting actor. He played the Tooth Fairy in Manhunter, and speaking of people from Manhunter and from Silence of the Lambs, we also got Ted Levine, who played Buffalo Bill, and I actually know him better as Stottlemyre on Monk, and he has a really interesting part, and you think it's going somewhere, and then you're wrong.
Yeah, I mean, I loved him in this pilot. I thought that he was great. I thought that he would have made a much better villain in terms of the one that they've set Colm Meaney up to be, so I will agree, I really wish that he had more to do on this show. We're going to see later Eddie Spears playing a Native American, Joseph Black Moon, and Tor Gunderson, who's going to be playing a security person, Christopher Heyerdahl, here in the camp, but we really haven't gotten to know those characters. But Hell on Wheels in general, I mean, are you into it? Are you hooked? Or are you at least curious? Are we going to keep watching this new show on AMC, yet another new show on AMC?
I'm going to give it at least a season. I think it has as much an interesting premise as any show that we've really gotten into. And I think, well, what attracts me to it is that its look, it's very comic booky in kind of the way the camera approaches certain things and the colors and close-ups on faces, it really does remind me of a comic book. So I think visually it could be very interesting.
Well, there are production, you know, similarities behind the scenes with other shows, including The Walking Dead. So I can see that comic book feel. You know, I agree that I like the way that it's set, that it's presented on screen. The wide open landscapes that can still be very bleak, the grimy, dirty world that they live in. And I of course, it's a period show. We just got through talking about J. Edgar and, you know, talking about washed out looks and color, for example. And here you've got the costumes, you've got the sets, and, you know, there's something compelling about the American frontier. I agree that there's a lot of potential for this show. And like Lost, like a lot of the other shows that we love, it's really going after some enormous themes that they can explore with this show. You've got the questions of democracy and capitalism and religion and vengeance and forgiveness and slavery and freedom. And of course, we're going to get into Native Americans and maybe Native rights and certainly right. women's rights. And a lot of those things could happen here. But I did find the pilot to some degree a little predictable. I mean, didn't you? It was just a little, I mean, comic booky can be good, but it can also be bad.
No, I there were certain parts of the pilot that I did see coming. But I think that's kind of true for anything Western. There are always certain elements of the Western genre that you can count on. And this is the very beginning of the show. And I think to some degree, they need the predictability to bring people in, to really acquaint them with what they're going to be seeing. So I really think that they can go far in this show, especially if they do explore those larger themes.
Yeah, and so, I mean, again, I think that they have a lot that they can work with. It was just mostly just some of it, the cheesy writing. And as we mentioned, Cole Meany's character, you know, Lily, she has a line where she's looking at the landscape and going, this landscape is so beautiful. It was so much better before humans showed up. And I mean, I don't know about you, but it just seems a little early in America's history for there to be an environmentalist involved. Or maybe it was just the way that it was written that I saw was problematic. And my primary complaint, the thing that took me way out of the show once I was really starting to get settled into it, was the way that the pilot ended, where they let Cole Meany give a soliloquy, a speech. I'm pretty sure he was talking to the camera. I don't think he was talking to someone in the room. And he's
breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah, and I don't think, I mean, I'm worried that that's what they're going to do at the end of every episode. Is someone going to sit down and say what we just saw and what's going to happen and what it all means? Because when he starts going into, there has to be a villain in history, and if that's going to be me, then I will be that villain because you need a villain. And I was like, oh my God, I hope that this is not the show that we're signing up with, or that I thought we were signing up with. I mean, did that work for you?
Not exactly, but I think this show has a lot more to offer than that. I really don't see them doing that every single week. I really think that they are trying to establish Cole Meany as a villain, and they're trying to establish certain characters as certain things. But I think along the way, we'll see characters twist, and we'll see, you know, different plot twists and things.
Right. Well, so if that was just the way to set it up, if that was basically a pilot move to basically say, ladies and gentlemen, here is the stage that we're setting, I can take it. I just hope that doesn't happen again, or at least not very often. I will agree, though, this was just the pilot. A lot of this was necessary setup. They had to introduce these characters and jump around, and there would have to be exposition explaining to us what is significant. So I am kind of curious how they can sustain some momentum moving forward. I mean, the building of a railroad isn't something that happens altogether that fast, and I do think that, like the other shows on AMC we like, is they do take their time with the pacing. It's a slow burn, and you're going to have interpersonal conflict and political intrigue and maybe battles with these natives, but I mean, is there going to be a lot of action, or is there going to be a lot of talking and glowering at people? I'm really not sure what to expect.
I'm thinking of the AMC shows that we know as kind of a spectrum, where Mad Men, there's a lot of talking and a lot of interpersonal conflict, and a lot of the conflict comes from just ideas. And on Breaking Bad, there's a lot of violence, and there's a lot of build up to that violence. And I think maybe this show will strike a balance between those two things, in that there will be a lot of violence, but it will also maybe be about character.
And certainly, like Mad Men, it's going to be about the period of time, the historical, you know, context in which everything happens, and that's going to be a big part of the draw. I will agree with you. I'm not sure if I'm at the season commitment level, but maybe a 6-episode pickup for sure here with Hell on Wheels. I hope that it it just develops a little more depth and a little more nuance than a cartoon. Although I will say that for a Western, you know, you might need a little bit of that cartoonishness. And, you know, we need more Westerns out there. I mean, Justified is the only other one, I think, that's on television. And this is a great addition to that. So we will be watching. Let's move on now quickly to talk a little bit about a reality show. And I was surprised this was your pick, but at least it's a cooking reality show, and that makes it a little more palatable. So let's get into The Next Iron Chef on the Food Network. Tell me about it.
In this competition, they're looking to find the next Iron Chef. They're taking a bunch of contestants, and they're whittling down the next person who's going to be on Iron Chef America. And Iron Chef America is based on this Japanese show that was very theatrical and very dramatic. It was a long-running show on the Food Network in which a bunch of culinary, like, I guess a bunch of culinary gladiators come up against these different challengers. And this is the American version that they're casting for. And on this particular series, the contestants are all very well-known Food Network personalities. And this is the fourth season. In the first season, Michael Simon won. In the second season, Jose Garces won. In the third season, Mark Forgione won. So this now is the fourth season.
Right. And now the third episode of this fourth season has already aired this past Sunday. But for those who might get into it or aren't caught up, we'll just talk about the premiere episode. And really what it was the setup of this season and meeting all of the new, you know, challengers to who might be the next Iron Chef. So who are some of the chefs in the running here?
Anne Burrell, who was Mario Batali's sous chef on Iron Chef America for years and years. Michael Chiarello, Elizabeth Faulkner, Alex Guarnaschelli, Chuck Hughes, who has a series on the Cooking Channel, Robert Irvine from Dinner Impossible, Bo McMillan from The Worst Cooks in America, Spike Mendelsohn, Marcus Samuelson, who I'm really surprised is doing this kind of contest because he's really, really well-respected outside of the Food Network, and Jeffrey Zakarian.
Now, every episode of The Next Iron Chef basically will remove one of these contestants, correct?
Correct.
So this first episode gave us a challenge where they had to cook outdoors in the elements and making their own fire and, you know, with limited ingredients, and they had to test their resourcefulness. And for that competition, they were in teams of two, and then the team that came in with the lowest score, according to these judges, and I think the judges rotate each episode as
right.
well, the team with the lowest score, each member had to compete head-to-head against each other. So first, they're the best of friends trying to succeed, and then they're trying to fight for their survival at the bottom of the ladder. So let's just use that as our setting. And these various chefs, who are the ones that you're rooting for and who are the ones you might be rooting against?
I'm rooting for Anne because she, like I mentioned, has been Mario's sous chef for a very long time, and she's been a chef for a very long time, and I always tend to pull for women in cooking competitions.
Yeah, because, and actually, there's never been a woman winner in this show.
Right, and chefdom anyway is a very male-dominated thing, so I really feel like I need to pull for Anne and also for Elizabeth Faulkner for that reason, and also Alex Guarnaschelli. She's I think the most likable of the contestants this year, but I am really rooting for Anne, and I'm also rooting for Chuck Hughes because he's a fellow Canuck.
Well, Chuck Hughes I think is pretty good. Now, I like Anne as a person, Anne Burrell. I think that when she has her own show, which she does, she's great.
Secrets of a Restaurant Chef.
I think that, you know, especially when they put her outdoors, of all of the chefs, she seemed to be taking the physicality of this challenge the worst. I mean, she did not look very happy out there in the sun and in the elements. I would agree with you. I do like Elizabeth Faulkner. I am rooting for women chefs because this entire, you know, culinary industry is very much a boys' club. I do like Alex Guarnaschelli. She feels the most down to earth, but she was also kind of freaking out. And just whenever I've seen her, I'm not sure if she has the chops to be kind of a champion and Iron Chef. But definitely, I agree that she seems to be the most accessible, likable of all of these competing this season. Let's talk a little bit about Marcus Samuelson, because I picked him as a favorite, and I don't really know his history, but my thought immediately, without making jokes about calling him Gus from Breaking Bad, you know, I think that he did strike me as someone who's very dignified and really talented, and someone that doesn't seem at home in a reality television cooking show.
No, I mean, it really surprised me that he is on this show, because he does have a very good reputation as a chef. He doesn't really need to be the next Iron Chef, because he has a lot of professional respect amongst his peers outside of the Food Network.
Well, I did Google him to learn more about him because he did strike me as interesting. I liked what he prepared in the pilot. I like his cooking. He had kind of a mix of Japanese and African influences. He apparently also has a lot of background in Swedish cooking, although unfortunately in real life, I think he's having money troubles in terms of his own restaurants. But again, I do like him. I almost feel like he's slumming around, playing around with these Food Network chefs. But now I think he might need the money, too. What about Jeffrey Zakarian? I mean, he's another person who at least presents himself as someone who's a little bit above the competition. But on his side, I think that he's playing at it a little bit too much. I think he's a little full of himself.
I think so, too. I really don't know that much about him. I think he's been a judge on Chopped, the other cooking competition show. He might be kind of positioned as the villain, the person you don't like on this particular season.
I could see that.
I do not like Robert Irvine. I cannot take the man very seriously because there was controversy about him padding his resume and making wild claims about the jobs that he's had that turned out to be untrue. And I think just a lot of the conflict between him and Anne Burrell is really him. I think he's... I don't know. I think he doesn't take her very seriously. And so he's the person to me that I'm going to root against.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I agree that they're setting up Jeffrey Zakarian as the cartoony bad guy, but I too kind of root against Robert Irvine. I'm sure he's a talented cook, a talented chef, maybe even a nice guy, but there's some scandals that you can't get away from. And I agree, I can't take him seriously. And when they have this rivalry in quote marks between him and Anne Burrell, I think Anne Burrell is having fun with it, you know, playing against him and competing with him, but he's taking it seriously because he's lacking that particular humor gene. He pretends that he has it, but I don't think he's got it. And, you know, like Bear Grylls, you've got Bear Grylls who's known for something on television, and then you read a little bit about what he's like in real life and how things actually turned up, and you can't take him seriously, you can't respect him, so that's a problem there. Anybody else in this lineup as we close that you think people should watch if they're watching the next Iron Chef?
I really liked how Michael Chiarello and Chuck Hughes got along. It seemed like they had like a little budding bromance going on. They seem to get along really well, and I kind of enjoyed watching them together, and so I'm hoping maybe if they both lose, I'll do a show together.
Well, I like that. Kind of like How to Boil Water, the Return, but with two men instead of women. Mm-hmm. I am enjoying the next Iron Chef. I'm not much one for reality shows, and I'm not as crazy about cooking shows as you are, I guess apart from Alton Brown, which is great because he's the judge or he's the MC of this program. Mm-hmm. But I do like the setup. I do like the challenges. I do like the secret ingredient. Like, they could have ended up with either scallops or canned tuna. And I was almost kind of curious what would have happened if they had to make something great with canned tuna.
You can't make anything great with canned tuna. Well, see, believe me, I've tried.
That's why I would have watched it. Like, maybe we can get some ideas there. And I don't know if they're going to do it again, but when they broke up the team that had to work together and made them compete against each other, that was actually a little heartbreaking in this pilot episode with the veteran and the younger chef. The younger chef got to pick his partner, so he picked the person he looked up to and then had to fight with him and fight to the death. So I like a lot of the setups. I do like the next Iron Chef. And as we mentioned, as we broadcast here, we've already lost two of these chefs that we've talked about. So we hope you check it out. And if you are into any other reality cooking shows, if you're into or not into Hell on Wheels, we absolutely want to hear from you.
We want to talk about exactly what you want to talk about. So don't be shy in keeping us posted on what you're watching and what you think about it.
And that's TV Tuesday for this week. Next week is still up in the air, but we should probably revisit some old friends like Fringe and Sons of Anarchy and Chuck, and maybe get back to the dueling network fantasy shows Once Upon a Time and Grimm.
And if you enjoy our podcast, we'll hope you'll take a moment to share Pop Spotting with your friends or family. To those of you who have already done that on Facebook and recommended us on Twitter, thank you very much.
That's right. Thanks for that. And big thanks to those of you who have rated and reviewed our show in the iTunes podcast directory. That's one of the best ways to bring new listeners into the fold.
Tomorrow is Wildcard Wednesday, and as a counterpart to the songs I picked for the year I was born back a few months ago, we're going back to 1974.
All right, and speaking of songs, our theme song was created by Dan Pashman of the Sporkful Podcast, and we want to say thank you for listening to our little show.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
Aloha.
Aloha.